if you haven't had a dad there to show you something and your mum hasn't shown you anything, you have a higher chance of just having a really low expectation of life.
Yeah.
You go out into the world and nothing means anything to you. Mm-hmm. But the only thing that you can get is either sex and drugs. Yeah. Judges are not our friends at all.
At all.
They're not. Well, I don't speak to the judge until, you know, the case comes up. They're not on the side of the local authority.
Nope.
I've had a case recently where the judge is really one of those empathetic judges that is on the side of the mum. Despite the history, she's like, we can still try this.
Yeah, but
some judges won't do that.
So can you just repeat that again? Because that's a prime point.
Yeah, yeah.
Judges are not on the side of local authority, and we are actually not.
This scenario can happen in, you know, so many different ways. So I'll go into a home.
Mm.
Let's assume this happens. Dog feces is everywhere.
I've seen that before.
Yeah, this is real.
Yeah.
Parents, they invite you into their house knowing that the dog feces is on the floor.
Yep.
Yeah. They've got other people staying in the house that have got criminal records and drug users.
Mm-hmm.
There's little children around.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do?
So today we have Curtis Powell. Curtis Powell is a qualified social worker and creator of an amazing platform called The Social Work Race. With a passion of educating parents and the wider community in safeguarding children and supporting trainee social workers in understanding what the profession entails. Hello Curtis, how are you?
Hello, it's a pleasure to be here.
I'm really, really happy that you're here. I'm so, so thankful. I think you're one who I have come across on social media and I've been so impressed about your opinions and how you also tie in the social education aspect.
Mm-hmm.
At times I think parents do think that you're harsh.
Yep.
However, you just say it how it is. And you speak from the perspective of what you would want as a social worker for parents to know. And sometimes it is hard to digest.
Yeah.
But the thing is, it is better to be transparent, as you know, than to hide information. So thank you for that.
No problem. Thank you.
So today we're going to be speaking about different areas of your profession,
mm-hmm.
but also touching on adoption and fostering and also neglect. So we're just going to start off by saying, in your opinion and in your experience, what is being a social worker like?
Wow, that's an open question. a social worker is, how can I envision it? Like someone who carries the weight of everyone's expectations to solve problems, to come up with the answers, to organize all the professionals. Everybody's looking at you. However, a social worker is the person primarily responsible to make sure that everybody does their part to make sure that in children's services, because I'm a children and family social worker, to make sure that everyone involved is doing what they can do to make sure the child is safe and well.
Yeah.
So it could be family, friends, school, health, whoever.
Yeah. One thing I've experienced as a practitioner is that social workers are in every single meeting.
Mm.
So while I will have maybe two cases, social workers have about 10 and have to attend all of those meetings.
Mm.
But I think a question that some people will have is, how do families get social workers?
Yeah. I like your questions, you know. I like the way you ask it.
Thank you.
Families get social workers. We don't know anything. Social workers don't know anything until someone calls us.
Yeah.
It could be like yourself, a therapist,
and
you've heard something that you're worried about the significant issues around the well-being of your mother that you're or father that you're counselling.
Mm-hmm.
It's from school. It's anonymous. Mm-hmm. It can be a self-referral from the parent or the child.
Mm-hmm.
Someone from the community. Mm-hmm. Could be a neighbour, police. All of these systemic structures around the child, we will get that information from.
Okay. So when you say systemic, I know what systemic is, but in the easiest way, between us, we can explain what it is. The systemic is, think about it as a wider and close network to that family, to that child. And it is an approach that benefits the family because professionals are looking at not only the household, but especially the household, but also the wider families, which I guess is where things like family trees or genograms come from, I guess. and a good referral, Curtis, I'm plugging Curtis, Curtis actually does help people write reports and referrals, would show that family's network.
Yeah, you have to address that.
Yeah.
So the child is at the center, and then coming out of, like arms coming out of that child's world is school. School's a big one, because they spend probably half of their life in school. So the school have got a good understanding of that child. And if the child comes in and they are sleeping in class, or they're aggressive and stuff, these are indicators. So the school will say, look, we're worried. And that's a part of the child's system. If the child isn't attached to their education system, then they're going to have a deficiency later on.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I think one thing that you said is so important is that it's the glimmers. The glimmers of children sleeping in class. The glimmers of children not coming in with their full uniform. Sometimes the things that we overlook, and that doesn't mean that, you know, professionals call social workers as soon as they see that. But the children are observed, they're looked at, they're asked questions, non-leading questions. So my next question is, I would say, is what are some of the concerns that allow a family to get to the stage of having a social worker? Because families are referred to family early help. Families are referred to community services. I currently work at a local authority, new community service. So there are stages. Me and you know that there are stages. So what are some of the things that would entail for a family to have an appointed social worker and not a family practitioner, not be referred to the local youth club?
Okay. There are so many. So I'll give you maybe two, three examples. Yeah. So some local authorities have what you might call an unborn baby protocol, which means that mum's pregnant, but she's had history of domestic abuse or police. She's a criminal record. She may have had previous children removed. She might be a drug taker. So the midwife will call us. And sometimes we get involved and the mum's doing all right. Sometimes mum is actually trying to hide the fact that she's addicted to certain drugs, or she's got a boyfriend that we know. Has got an abuse history, and so we will say, look, we're going to be involved, or we will, depending on what the issues are, we may say we're going to be involved until you've given birth and you do the work. So we're not just involved, we're saying there's a path of work that we want you to do to show us that you are informed and you know what you're doing hereafter. But you do get issues of disguise compliance. You get issues of especially if you've, as a child, have grown up in a system, you know how to talk.
Yeah.
And so you can...
you can blab.
You can hoodwink.
Yeah.
That's the word, yeah?
False compliance is very common.
Yeah. You'll find that with a lot of people who've grown up in the system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that goes into our next, I guess, segment is... There is a majority of children and families in social care that when you look into that family, when you go into a mosaic of a whatever system the local authority uses, members of that family have been known to social care.
Yeah.
And there's always this debate about, is it learnt behaviour or is it just what's just happened to that person? Or is it trauma, the T word?
It could be all or none.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of it is culture. So, you know, if your grandma and your mum have had social services intervention, you know, a lot of the time it's, you know, this abuse goes back generations. You have to start from Adam. Do you know what I mean? So generation, as soon as someone abuses someone, you just started a whole ripple in the future of abuse and neglect, and they pass that on to their children. So that's culture. So some families you work with, it's nothing for a social worker to be there, because they've always been there.
Yeah, they've always had,
you know, because
and they will tell you that, oh yeah, when I had my social worker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're used to it. It's nothing. Whereas in my culture, it's the worst thing.
Yeah.
And that creates its own problems, you know?
We're going to get to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think my observation is, I think I would, learned behaviour is a, I guess, a thin line thing to call it. But I think it's cause and effect. I think by the time, unfortunately, some people who are known to social care is not their only, I guess, issue in life. It could be mental health. It could be, a lot of it is actually mental health.
Mm.
And what happens is that it trickles down into family. So as you know, conditions like the personality disorder, borderline personality disorder, where women or men do not realize they have it because it's the norm in their family to be erratic, to be spontaneous, to be aggressive. So by the time they've given birth, and you know, sometimes the choice to even have intercourse and to give birth is through life adverse trauma, and then they now create a child and do not have the capacity because of their own things they're dealing with to look after that child and see that child as an individual, which then causes that child to be neglected, which causes a radar. So I would definitely say it's a cause and effect, definitely. And I think across all cultures, some cultures might not want to admit it, but I think we've both seen the generational patterns.
Do you know what? I think this. If you have not had a culture of someone holding your hand, complimenting you, hugs, kisses, you know, showing love. If you haven't had a dad there to show you something and your mum hasn't shown you anything, you have a higher chance of just having a really low expectation of life. You go out into the world and nothing means anything to you. But the only thing that you can get is either sex and drugs. Do you know what I mean? And there's the go-to. They're easy to get. And sex is free. Do you know what I mean? So people will have sex and they will have children. And they haven't worked out, actually, there's more to life. Because actually, let's talk about preparing for the children. But if you haven't had that, then you're already on your back foot. And that's sad.
It's a distant knowledge to them. To actually sit and to speak and to plan. Sometimes you work with some clients and you even ask them things like, oh, what are you doing next week? And it's not like they don't have no idea, but they actually cannot picture it. They can't picture it. Or you ask questions, because in our similar cultures, oh, what do you want to be when you grow up? These are questions that, you know, my 10-year-old cousin can answer. It might not be what he wants to be, but there is that family culture of thinking about the future. And what I've noticed with some families that unfortunately have social care involvement, especially the ones that is generational, there is no thought about tomorrow, which then affects how they prepare for appointments, the practical things. It affects how they take their children to nursery. Attendance doesn't mean anything to them because they're not thinking about their child's day-by-day progress, term-by-term progress. They're actually unconsciously just trying to live.
Just trying to survive.
And if that means, you know, getting that dopamine hit of having sex irresponsibly, taking drugs, being influenced, that's what it is for them.
And the thing is, when I work with parents, I'm always telling them I get it. Because I come from deprivation. I come from poverty, but I understand it. But my culture was different. But I understand it. I've got family who are in cycles, friends who are in cycles of challenge. And I'm saying to parents every single day, I understand your journey up to a point. But we can do something more. Because this isn't working, you know.
But I think the difference between people who understand and people that don't is actually the capacity to hold it in mind. Again, there are some people who unfortunately. They do not have the capacity. You know, there are some people who come from a... And when we're speaking about culture, not only ethnicity, but society culture, family culture, what is learnt, what is observed. That, I think, is a bigger culture sometimes than actually culture that comes from ethnicity. But what I've noticed is that if there is that generational pattern where people are not able to hold things in mind... A few sessions is not going to work. As a mentoring, sit-down, motivational preaching or talk is not going to work for that person because they cannot. They actually cannot. They can't hold it. And it's really, really unfortunate. But that doesn't mean that social workers and practitioners don't have breakthroughs. I think what's good now is that there's a lot of collaborative work.
Yeah, you know something. I'm going to say it then. The system is broken in so many ways. I don't think it was ever really... not broken because I want to do more. And I guess when you start out and working in social services, you have a dream of, I'm going to help and help families overcome this hurdle and that hurdle. Mm-hmm. Actually, probably most of the families you help, you're only going to get them over one and hope that they accomplish the rest.
Mm-hmm.
In my job, we a lot of time close cases that we think they're coming back or they're not going to overcome that cycle.
There's no capacity here.
There's no capacity. The systems and structures are not all there.
Yeah.
To see some families, they need a good 2-3 years work. Yeah. We don't have that. No. So that's where we fail.
Yeah. But then, I think that's where we fail as a society.
Mm.
But the thing is, at times, I'm okay with the remit of my work.
Mm.
I think in my type of work, so I've done long times, I've done 18, I've worked in an environment where it's 18-month long.
Yeah.
Where we collaborated with social workers. Even social workers didn't even understand that we're bringing them in about, okay, so this is this side of it where the mother and child will come in and do their play therapy, do their mentalization, and as a social worker, you support that.
Yeah.
But at times, I've got to the point where, at that point, I am content with the work, the approach that I've been employed in, that I've chosen to.
Mm.
So the play therapy, the mentalization, the parent and child observation. If at the point, at that time, things haven't got better, then I guess it's the privilege of having that remit in my work where there's been times I've had to be part of people to make a decision that this child is not safe. This child is not safe. And I think it's a sensitive thought for people because people normally focus on the adults. You know, it's easy for us to say, oh, this adult has been through so much. But what people don't understand is that for children, every day counts. Something that a child can observe on Friday can be engraved in that child's mind and allow them to project the same behaviours that they've seen their parents. You know, children, we say children are sponges, but sometimes I feel like we don't really understand the saying. So I think that's one thing is, going back to my point, is that I am very content at times with the remit of my work. And I say, if I cannot do this, I guess maybe a new referral or actually having a look at, is this environment right for this child?
Yeah, Which is quite sad. That's the ugly side of social work now.
Yeah.
And I just before I go into it, I wish that I was doing your work because
really the intervention side. type.
Because
I do enjoy it. I'm happy I'm not social worker.
Because I know I'm good at that.
Yeah.
And I think I could really set the ship sailing in a good direction.
Mm.
In social work, we don't always get to see that out.
Yeah.
But the ugly side is we have to, as social workers now, decide how long can we sit in this space before significant harm or long-term impact?
That's the term, significant harm.
Happens, and that is a real gamble.
Mm-hmm.
For the parents, they're like, well, this is normal life. What's your problem?
Yeah.
And for some members of the public, they'd be like, well, what's the problem? Yeah. And then for social workers, they're like, we see this every day.
Yeah.
This doesn't end well.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to make very uncomfortable decisions.
Yeah.
Sometimes we get it wrong. So, yeah. And that's another discussion. I don't know.
It's another discussion. But, yeah. Sometimes, you know, you do. And that's, I think, part of any work. A discussion I always tell, a point that I always have for my friends and families, that sometimes we are wrong. Everybody is wrong.
Mm.
I think it's so wrong to place people in a pedestal where that person can never be wrong.
Mm.
That person can never. No, people make mistakes. And again, going back to parents, people make mistakes.
Mm.
But I think, for me, I think it's when children's lives and well-being and everyday life is negatively affected to the point where that parent cannot see it, but you can see it as a professional. You go on a home visit, you interact with the child, a stranger walks in, you know, that child at 3 is going to the stranger, and everyone's like, oh, the 3-year-old is so friendly, he's got manners, he knows how to greet. No, that child is telling you that I live in an environment where
I have no attachment.
I just go run my own business, stranger danger.
It's an indication of the parent.
Indication of the parent, where that parent is not a safe space.
Mm.
And again, this is something I always say, where we forget that we are actually children's guardians, where children don't have the ability, the capacity to know what's right or wrong, to know how to behave, to know how to keep themselves safe. Adults have to.
Mm.
And I believe that in our work, one thing that we do is that we really, really try to keep children safe,
Yeah.
which is, I guess, really important. So quickly, go into the removal process.
Mm-hmm.
There are people who just think when social workers come, they take the parent to the judge, they say they share their opinion, and the judge goes, to care.
No.
No, it's not, is it? No, no,
look,
no.
This is the most contested and intense topic on my platform.
Yeah, I know.
Part of the purpose of my platform is to help families and parents avoid that process, but to let them know how it really works.
Yeah.
I cannot say, go into someone's house and say, this doesn't look right.
By next week, you're gonna. That's not how it works.
No, okay. No. Well, actually.
Sometimes, though.
Okay, so sometimes. Yeah. So I have to. What do you want to do? Go into it? Do you want to talk about it? Okay, so the process is like, for example, this scenario can happen in, you know, so many different ways. So I'll go into a home.
Mm.
Let's assume this happens. Dog feces is everywhere.
I've seen that before.
Yeah, this is real.
Yeah.
Parents, they invite you into their house knowing that the dog feces is on the floor.
Yep.
Yeah. They've got other people staying in the house that have got criminal records and drug users.
Mm-hmm.
There's little children around.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do? Okay. Okay. So, or you go into a home and you see a child and they're wincing. You're like, why are they wincing on that side? You look and there's a bruise. You ask the parent, what happened? Because the referral came from, I don't know, a friend of theirs or a community saying that they're abusing their kid. You look at the child and you're like, there's something wrong with their back or there's a bruise there. Let me have a look. And the parent's trying everything to avoid that. So in that situation, that second child I just spoke about, we would have a child protection medical.
Yeah.
And the consultant will do that immediately.
Yeah.
And they will look at the child and say, something's happened to this child,
mm-hmm.
not in line with what the mum or dad said. Can that child go back to that home?
No. Not.
This is it.
Not in my... Anyways, not... As you know, we have reflective practice, we have supervision, and things are really... Professionals really, really tear each other apart sometimes. In a professional way.
My manager's going to tear me apart. She's going to say, what did you see?
What did you hear?
Because this has to go to a legal team. But before we get through all of that, I've got to go... The police are going to say, this child cannot go home.
Yeah.
We will put the child or children in protective custody.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Emergency. Emergency care.
Yeah.
Layman terms.
For 72 hours whilst we investigate this.
Yeah.
And then we as social services have to determine if the child can go back
mm-hmm.
or if... They go into temporary foster care.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's always temporary at first.
Yeah, always.
Yeah. It's very difficult
mm-hmm.
to put a child in care because their carers could be anywhere.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And it's traumatic for the children.
Yeah. So traumatic.
So, in the case of, let's say we go to that first family, dog feces everywhere. We say to, I could say to mum, clean this up.
Yeah.
Or dad, because it's usually the dads are never really there, to be honest. Clean this up, I'll be back on Monday.
Yeah.
Really?
And sometimes,
you know,
if that family is working with maybe a parenting practitioner or part of our other observation and the relationship, the professional relationship is good, you will contact me and be like, I know you're seeing this family tomorrow.
Yeah.
By the way, I've just done an unannounced home visit and this is what I've observed. And I go, oh my gosh, so tomorrow I've got to see them and be transparent and tell them, I know your social worker went to your house yesterday, came on a visit yesterday, and this is what happened. Let's explore that.
Right.
Yeah.
So it is tough. And then in that situation, we would then say, well, this referral's coming about the mess in the home.
Mm-hmm.
You look back, you've got a long history.
Yep.
You know.
It's never just today.
Long history of different boyfriends,
mm-hmm.
4 kids in the home. I'm just reflecting on families I've just worked with a few years ago. And the last boyfriend could be 2 baby daddies and a lot, and both of them have been abusive.
Mm.
So we have to make that decision and say, well, look, that decision again would most likely result in, again, emergency police protection. I would make a case and go back to my manager and we discuss it with the legal team.
Mm-hmm.
The legal team would say, what did you see? What did you hear?
Mm-hmm.
They would discuss if we have threshold
mm-hmm.
to pursue this in court.
Yes, exactly.
They would say to me, Curtis, go and, most of the time, they will say, go and do the work with the family.
Yeah. Or refer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can this place be cleaned up? What did you see?
Mm.
They will always push back
because
it is a lot of work.
It's a lot of work.
But now this is where it gets interesting.
Okay.
It depends on who the social worker is. Yeah, some social workers will go, but I've done this, right? Mm. It's a gamble.
Yeah.
Now I'm gambling my career on, mum, clean this up. Mm-hmm. I'm coming back tomorrow.
Yeah.
Another social worker would have said, that child needs to go right now.
Yeah. But then, both of it would be based on the history that they've seen on that family. But then you would have different professional judgments. And sometimes it's because of maybe the experience and the placements that you've had while training, the different interventions that you've been trained in. Because when I go into a home or when parents come and see me with their children, I know what I'm looking for, even unconsciously, because of my training in attachment, my training in adverse lifehood experiences.
Mm.
I'm looking at body language. I'm looking at eye contact. I'm looking at what that child is wearing. Mother's response, mother's capacity to think about their child, or father's capacity to think about their child at that moment. And if I'm reading something where there's been a pattern of not bearing that child in mind, I get really, really concerned. And then I do volunteer to be part of the social work meetings, where you always see some social workers agree, some are like, let's give it 6 weeks more, let's work with them more, and let's see.
Sometimes I don't agree with child protection chairs.
Yeah.
Or independent officers. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I don't agree with the judge. Sometimes I don't agree with my manager.
Yeah.
But a decision has to be made.
Yeah.
You know. There's something else. So the legal, we call it a legal strategy meeting. Mm-hmm. They call it different things everywhere.
Yeah, everywhere.
But a meeting with the legal team from the local authority.
Yeah.
They will push back on us if we haven't done it. Because they know that if they go to court with what they have, the judge will say, what the heck are you bringing this here for?
Yeah, and sometimes because of the process of being a judge and the process of getting to the point in your career and family services, sometimes the judges, they get to know certain people.
Right.
So you know, if you can predict a certain judge, you're like, listen, that judge is going to throw us out.
Right.
So we better come correct.
Judges are not our friends at all.
At all.
They're not. Well, no. I don't speak to the judge until, you know, the case comes up. They're not on the side of local authority.
Nope.
I've had a case recently where the judge is really one of those empathetic judges that is on the side of the mum. Despite the history, she's like, we can still try this.
Yeah, but some judges won't do that. So if you just repeat that again, because that's a prime point.
Yeah, yeah.
Judges are not on the side of local authority, and we are actually not.
No.
We're not making this up.
Judges are separate.
Yeah.
And they've got their own remit.
Yeah.
And they have to be very careful about what they say and do, just like we do.
Mm-hmm.
We don't go to court unless we've got something. Now, I want to throw this in there.
Okay.
Myself and my manager and the legal team could coincidentally have a really low threshold for risk and present a case to court. I believe this. I've not seen it, but I believe it strongly. I've worked in different local authorities, seen different managers. I can gauge this, right? But it's actually, sometimes kids go into care when they shouldn't because people are screaming and making a lot of noise down below about risk and harm, and it alerts everybody.
And also, as well, I think one thing is important to say is that all the services and interventions are not always available in each local authority. So in a local authority where there is an 18-month program to help parents that the children are at the verge of care, another one has a community, which is below early help, that they can allow you to set goals, have a nice practitioner who would do home visits, and go to your meetings with social workers and teachers. Whereas another local authority don't have that. All they have is early help, community...
drugs workers.
Your drug workers, volunteer sessions that
these families... Home Start, I think they call it.
Yeah. Volunteer services that these families don't access. And we know that. We know it's the middle class that access community services. But that's a question for another... That's a topic for another day.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact is, it varies, unfortunately.
It does. So to be fair, like, the judges are not our friends. The amount of paperwork, if I put a child in care, I could be in London and that child could be put in Liverpool.
Yeah.
And I've got to go to Liverpool every 2 weeks until we have that looked after review. We have to have a bucket load of meetings on top of my normal caseload. So I can't honestly say that social workers are looking forward to that process. It's something that we are really trying to avoid in general. Yeah. after mistakes made, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But
it will be.
But generally, you know what the other issues is that it's happened. We've had to put children in protective custody because of serious neglect and harm, right?
Serious.
But the family are screaming, saying they're just taking my kid.
Yeah, and then. Yeah.
Then the community just gets upset. Yeah, exactly. They don't understand the don't story. Understand. So whenever people have got like a whole look at social services, I'm like, they're not involved for no reason. There's something going on. You may not know the story. I say to people, because I get DM'd every single day.
Yeah.
This is my story. And they're asking me questions and I'm saying, I can't answer these questions until I see the assessment.
Yeah.
Till I know the other side, because you're giving me your version. Let me see social services version. To be honest, I get why people are scared, because they're not aware of some of the serious things. Like, culturally, it might be okay to let your kids drink all kind of drinks at night time and then wake up for school and then have a 50% attendance rate to school, come
for
to school,
people, that
they're
is
not
the
washing,
norm.
They're not eating, they're not cared for, and that's okay.
Yeah,
and
for you,
but that's not okay. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So that's a lot of contention for social workers.
So there's something I want to touch on quite quickly is one thing that I have gotten to know through working and experience is that once a judge has said, or once a decision has been made, okay, this child has to be removed from this home, what people do not know is that that child's network is looked at first. Or in the process, social workers would have worked together with other professionals who are working with that family to say, this mother always mentions an auntie that lives so-and-so.
Yeah.
Or there's an uncle, or even grandparents. Let's explore that. Let's do a quick assessment to see if that child can have a kinship order, special guardianship, rather than be externally put outside of the family.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I have to evidence that I've tried to contact everybody.
Yeah.
And I have to do a viability assessment on friends and family.
Yeah.
Can you do it, auntie? Yes or no? I have to do it, whether it's negative or positive. I still have to do that assessment. Mm-hmm. You know, I've already got a caseload.
Yep.
Then I have to do 3-4 assessments. And sometimes you'll go to a family who says, we'll take the child.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how many bedrooms you've got?
Yeah.
Have you got?
Mm-hmm.
This is a tiny space. You've got 4 children already and you want another one.
Yeah.
You think you can do it. And we have to evaluate that.
But sometimes, and I think I've told you before, my personal judgment on kingships, especially in the African and Caribbean community, is at times, again, it's thinking about the adults. It's thinking about the shame. It's thinking about, oh, you know, this child can't be lost from our hand.
Yeah.
If the child goes outside, then that's it.
Yeah.
But then I look at the family networks. When social workers tell me with some of the cases I handle, okay, we're looking at this. But I look at the family network. I say, if this young woman or this young man is not speaking to their parents, or they've had experiences of their parents, and now their parents are now able, thankfully, to look after their child, again, well, what position is that child going to be in? And we speak about false compliance, and we know that in kingship and guardianship, there is a lot of false compliance because of good intentions, because they don't want the child to go. But I always reflect on the point of, is it always the best thing for that child to still be in that family network when there is a generational pattern or when there is unaccountability?
But this is a genuine dilemma.
I know.
Because...
which judges don't care about at times.
Well, you know, the judge is going to expect you make sure you search for family before we make this a permanent fixture in foster care, right? But the dilemma is this. Is the child better in foster care or better with that family?
Mm.
Are they better with their family network in maybe cramped conditions with parents that aren't necessarily equipped, parent, auntie, uncle, whatever, cousin is not necessarily equipped, or are they better in foster care?
Mm.
That's an almost impossible question to answer.
It's case by case. It's
right?
Case
by
case.
But statistically, the chances of you being an alcoholic or having mental health problems, leaving education, abusive or self-abusive, is massively high in care.
Mm, yeah.
Would family been better? I don't know.
Yeah, we don't. It's case by case.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's just a pattern that I've seen. And I know it's a pattern I've seen because I am a black woman, because I am Nigerian, and I see sometimes the intention is more than the capacity.
Yeah.
And I do wonder, what is the reason?
Yeah.
Is it about the shame? But then where were you guys? Where was this network when this child was being neglected? Where was this network when the child wasn't going to school? So, yeah, exactly. So that's why I'm a bit, with kingships and special guardianships, when I'm part of them, I do really look through thoroughly and share my professional opinion because it's not up to me.
I think the one factor that they're looking at is the child connected to their family.
Yes. And it's important for black children to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think my last question is about adoption and fostering in, again, the African and Caribbean community. We know that there are less people who are signing up to be foster carers or adoptive parents, but our children hold a big percentage.
Black children
in the care system.
They're overrepresented in
the care system. Yeah, they're overrepresented in the system. Where do you think the gap is? I think it's a mixture of a lot of things. I think it's social, economic factors, but I also think, again, it's their mentality. I do think there are people who do have the capacity to do it, but there is something strange about having someone else's child in their home. I think some people don't even need the money, but obviously the money, it comes with it, is a job as well. It is a job. But I think there is that thing about having an outsider in your home that prevents people from, you know, we don't know where this, what spirit is coming with this child, or we don't know. It's true.
It's about religion and stuff like that.
No, not even religion, but people who are not even deep in spirituality and religion have that mentality unconsciously, or we don't know what's following that child for them to come. Because unfortunately, what adults do to children is projected onto children and it becomes the child's identity. So if that child is coming from a home where abuse has happened, unfortunately, that child takes up that identity as someone who's been abused.
Well, oh man, there's so much. I mean, I think that so much has not been explored because I did some research on it, and I think that there's massive gaps in the research.
Yeah.
With regards to the number of black children in care, for some reason, there's more of them in care. Yeah. That's a discussion.
Yeah.
And then proportionately, you won't have as many black carers coming in to say, I want to look after children.
Yeah.
Interestingly, my mum and my dad, both my grandparents, sets of grandparents, they are foster carers.
Really?
My dad's I've got two adopted brothers and a sister as well. She's, what, she 3 years old?
Wow.
3-4 years old. So it's something that I've grown up in. Mm. And we don't fully understand why black people are not coming forward, but pound for pound, more of us would have to be coming forward to cover the minorities. Yeah. But
And they are coming forward. I don't want to sound harsh because I see them. I'm on a panel.
It's just a shortage, though.
Yeah, there's a shortage. I'm on a panel and I see they do come forward. For kingship, for guardians, of course they do. Mm. But also foster parents and long-term fostering as well. And adoption, obviously, is permanent, right?
But what will be interesting is to see, because obviously black people are generally at the lower end of the economic scale.
Yeah.
I've worked with families who are struggling financially because there's a whole lot of talk about they're trafficking our kids and the profits they're making.
Yeah.
We don't make good money as foster carers.
Yeah.
It is not a lot of money at all.
Yeah.
I work with families who, I'm a grandmother who struggles.
And they still expect them to go for training, which is obviously the best thing to do.
She works full time.
Yeah.
She has a number of children in a small space.
She's got to fill in the logs.
It's not easy. It is really not easy. So it is as you say, case by case. But being a foster carer, you have to say to yourself, I'm changing my life for this.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. Some people have maybe bought their house.
Yeah.
They've got a bit of inheritance. Yeah. They can say, yeah, I can do it.
Yeah.
Black people are not necessarily in that scale.
Mm.
So there's a lot there.
Mm. But I think we're going to, this is the last thing that we're going to say is, but what would you say to the black families who can? Why is it important for them to foster and to adopt?
Yeah. I think we as humans, I don't even know. I mean, you asked me to speak specific to black.
Yeah, for this one, because our children are, you know, a high percentage in the care system.
Yeah. We have to save our children. You know something? I'm I'm going to say this, though, yeah. just to caveat a little bit. Black or white.
Mm, yeah.
But we have to...
Because there's space for that as well. There's space for black children to be placed in cultures that are not of their own.
Yeah, and they can be loved, like some of my family. But I would say to the black families out there, if you have space and capacity, save a life.
Yeah.
Because you're really saving a life. It's you must have something to pour into someone else and dedicate that and set a new trend and a set of ethics for them in their own lives. Because you're changing a whole series of generations.
Yeah.
If you can think about that and just think, how can I contribute to that? I think that would be a really good thing.
Thank you so much, Curtis. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hello, welcome to the Parent Advice Hub. My name is Lisa Ogbede. Please do subscribe and follow us on Instagram at the Parent Advice Hub. You can also check us out online at www.theparentadvicehub.com. Thank you.